Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Are you ready?
Zoe.
So this is your first time as a guest slash co-host for season two.
New and improved Relentless Diaries. Yeah.
New and improved. Cheers.
Cheers. So, wow, I'm finally here. You know how hard I worked for this, man. I podcasted my ass. I always wanted to be a guest. So you know what?
You always want to be a guest on this podcast, even though you're here every day and you edit and you record.
Yes, I actually wanted to explain that to all the people that always be in your DMs about wanting to be on the show and everything like that. I fucking produce the show. I do all the editing and everything. And what is it, episode 13 or something like that?
Season 2, episode 1.
13, we've done a handful of episodes before. And this is my first guest, you know, being in front of the camera. I had to earn this, you know?
You didn't have to earn it.
I had to earn being a guest on my own show, you know? And here we are. Here we finally are. Mans are out here, leveling up. I can be a guest on my own podcast now.
Literally. And for everyone who has been messaging me and DMing me, both, do you want to go by Clyde or Chris?
Clyde.
Okay. For everyone who's been like messaging me and Clyde and DMing us, we weren't quitting on this podcast. We also weren't fighting for people who thought we had
beef.
There was no fighting. There was no quitting. I think we both got to a point where we were, I would say, getting... life was picking up on our personal ends, both of us. And
in a good way.
In a good way. Yeah, I would say it was a good way.
Yeah.
And I think with, like I said, the way I wanted this show to work, I wanted it to be super authentic. I wanted to have my guests in my space. I wanted to be able to, you know, chill, eat, drink, whatever that looks like. And because COVID restrictions were so tight in Toronto, kind of when we finished episode 12.
Yeah.
I just wanted to take a break. I don't know. Like I said, it was hard to do this without having my guests physically with me and without having you to be able to like record and edit, because I'm not podcast savvy. Even though I do have a podcast, I'm more just personality.
Zoe doesn't know shit.
I have personality and looks, but Clyde is the brains. So obviously not even being to be able to like connect with you and record, like I just didn't want to do anything that didn't feel right or genuine.
We weren't gonna do the Zoom stuff.
Yeah, I didn't want to do the Zoom stuff. I didn't want to do like the virtual, you know, interviews and stuff like that. I know it's worked for some other podcasts, but for me, I was like, I don't know. I like the whole setup that we have with having the guests here in person, you know.
I think that's a huge testament to just what Relentless Diaries podcast is, you know. I think so many people, you know, when I speak to them about it, you know, they'll say this or they'll say that, and they're like, yo, y'all say some crazy stuff on there, y'all were talking about this, you know, shaking the table or whatever. And it's like, you know, when Zoe comes in, like I try and explain to people, when Zoe comes in, sometimes she doesn't give her guests like a topic or breakdown and everything. It's very, very, very authentic. It's very real. You're the exact same way before we start recording to when we're recording to when we're done, you know? Like, it's not a character. You are, like, really who you are. And, like, people resonate with that. That's why people like tune in, you know, and this is why it's a dope podcast and it's authentic. There's nothing fake about it. You know, you don't even like when we're talking about who we want on and guests and stuff like that. You're like, I don't want it to be like some big, you know, because we've had some people on. We've had the Marlins and everything on like that. So it's like, no, this is like the conversations, everything is a very authentic thing. So I think like what you're saying with not wanting to compromise, you know, having your guests in studio with you, it was worth holding out over.
100%.
You know, because it's a real thing.
Yeah, and our last episode was right before Christmas. And yeah, today we're like mid-March, so it's been about a 3 month, I would say.
It's been a minute.
2 months or so, hiatus. But like I said, it was worth it. I think we both took our time in figuring out what we wanted and what we were doing personally. We both have new jobs.
New studio.
We have new studio, new visuals, new topics, new guests coming. So I just wanted to give all of our listeners kind of that, I would say, communication that we didn't just like end this.
Yeah.
And it wasn't something, I know I've said so many times, it was something that I wanted to do and I want to continue and I want to see it grow. So I want people to know that it wasn't just like me quitting, you or I quitting. It was more
absolutely.
Just like life picks up, you know, and sometimes it's okay to take a break.
Yeah.
You know, it's, and like I said, we took a break. And we came back better.
Yeah, no, for we took a break for good reasons.
Exactly.
And to like all those people too, you know, I obviously, you know, do a lot of the back end stuff here. I was still getting a lot of emails about us ranking on, you know, Apple Podcasts and stuff like that. So it's like the support seemed to still be there. Everybody was always still asking. It never really trailed off when people were like, so when are you starting it again? So like, you know, the people that review it, the people that quote it on Twitter, the people that download it and shit, like,
and subscribe, people who are still subscribing to our YouTube, it's slowly growing.
You guys are amazing. Like, you guys are the reason why like this is still a thing and why we're also still motivated to keep going, because we also feel like, you know, you guys have been there supporting us, so like it's only right we keep continuing, and it's like we got a lot more we still got to say. So
exactly. So how have you been?
I've been good, you know, because I got a new job and everything. Things are picking up. I was like, it's funny, when we started this, I really didn't have much going on, I feel like. You know, it was pandemic. I was working at a restaurant, and that closed down, obviously, because of that. And, you know, I think we've told the story before. I DM'd you or whatever, and then just this came, and then that kind of led to this new job that I have, and I'm working with people I've always wanted to work with. I'm in front of the camera. I'm doing news segments. I'm getting put on meme accounts and stuff like that.
Right.
It's different. It's a very new space that I'm
now.
In. Yo, I'm not famous, but I'm visible. People are looking at me, and people are paying attention to what I'm saying because I'm on a large platform. You know, for those I'm working at Before They're Famous, Famous News, and I do the news segments there. And yeah, like it's a big platform and a big team that I've been privileged to work with. So yeah, there's a lot of eyes on me, and it's different. It's kind of like, I wonder about people like you, you know, like being in this position now.
People like me.
Yes, people like you, who I make that sound so bad.
I'm like, what?
When I say people like you, people like Zoe, who are very active on social media, like with their presence and like on Twitter, you know, like you're always interacting with people, you're always replying to things, and it's like, you know, sometimes, a lot of the time, you've like lit up Twitter with conversations that stemmed from podcast episodes.
Right.
So, you know, having people in your DMs, people commenting and people getting at you on social media is like a new thing to me that I'm like learning how to do. And I'm like, wow, I don't know how people like you do this and are so cool and calm and collect and like are able to just, you know, always be reacting to people and stuff. Like, that shit is so hard to be. Like, you're really good at that, you know?
Really? I always feel like I'm super like, because I wouldn't say I get offended easily, but I definitely get snappy easily.
Yeah.
And I definitely take things people say to me like is it beef or like, you know what I mean? So I don't let, I even though I should, that's what I try to work on, I don't let things slide off my back very easily.
Yeah.
I'm always just like, yo, what is it? Like, you know, say it with your chest. Like, what is it? Like, let's go. You want back and forth? I'll give you a back and forth. You know what I mean? So that is not the best thing, I would say, but I feel like
I think it is. I think it's good to be that way.
Really?
Yeah, I think like I want to be more that way.
I feel like I need to be above it.
You feel like you're succumbing, like you're going low by like interacting sometimes with that stuff?
Not even like going low, but I feel like, yo, am I really going back and forth with this person? Like, I genuinely don't care. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it's also like at this point, like, don't try to come to me. So I feel like being like that social media, I guess, presence, or having that social media presence can be difficult, because it's like, there's people who definitely have a larger platform than I do, but it's like, what do you let roll off your back and what do you engage in? And I always choose to fight. Like, I choose violence all the time.
You always choose violence.
I'm always choosing
violence. Why are you always choosing violence?
Because people won't, like, don't ever treat me like I'm a bitch.
Yeah.
Like, you have, I just choose violence because it's like, who are you? Like, don't talk to me. You don't know me. You don't know people. Like, people have to be very careful on how they...
And you
come at people, especially on social media.
Yeah, I think so too.
Who the fuck are you?
I hate that people can kind of hide behind like a screen, you know, like not that. Attached to their name, you know. They can use a handle that you can't find out where.
Right.
Actually, if you want to find out, you know, put that. Yo, people with burner accounts and stuff like that on Twitter. If you take their @ and put it in Twitter and try and sign in and be like, oh, like, I forgot my password. It'll show you the email that it's attached to. And it'll like star it out and stuff like that. So. Little fun fact for people that have Twitter people.
Are you a creep?
Nah, I work in social media. Like, yo, Zoe, in the last 3 months, I've learned a lot about, like, just that kind of stuff. And it's, I don't know. Because I'm not like that. I don't choose violence. Right. I've always got an opinion cool, that I choose collected. To, not, I wouldn't even say that, because I know that if I'm going to express something I'm passionate about, I can get, like, I don't know. I could get passionate, and I don't want to come across a certain way or be, you know, misunderstood or misconstrued or anything. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I watch. Like that's why I seen you. You know, like you were always on. You know what it was for me? Because it was in the middle of George Floyd when you posted a very long story about you speaking about, you know, mm-hmm. the issues, mm-hmm. and I was kind of like, yo, this girl's always popping shit on Twitter, and right. she can talk too. She got a voice. Yo, she needs a podcast, you know? So that's why, you know, I used to have a podcast, and I'm not expressing my opinion as much. And that's right. why I'm saying, you know, with the whole choose violence thing, being active on social media, I need to be better at that. I need to be replying to comments more and shit like that, expressing my opinion when I have a hot take and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's tumultuous, and it's bad for your mental health, man.
What's bad for mental health? Social media?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, I think it can.
Too much of it is not a good thing.
And it's like a real life addiction. I think people don't realize like how much of an addiction social media plays in our lives. It's weird, and I think COVID's not helping.
No.
Like I said, we started this podcast during the Black Lives Matter movement, which was during COVID, was it not?
Yeah, it was definitely
during COVID. And that, now we're about a year in or so, and I don't know. Like, I feel like COVID has had such a weird, like, I just don't know how, like, I believe we're going to get back to normal, but it's going to be a completely different normal.
Yeah.
Like, I don't
think... Masks will always be a thing, I feel like.
Like, for the rest of our lives?
For, like, it'll be almost a cultural thing. Like, it's, you know, it's going to be an accessory, like, with fashion and stuff. I just feel like masks are here to stay. And I'm okay with it, you know? A lot of people say...
I hate it.
You hate it? Yeah. No, it's not... It's
not ideal.
But, you know, people are having less colds. The flu season, you know, isn't, like, what it was. People right. are, for the most part, cleaner and more sanitary and getting... Like, obviously people have COVID and everything, but just less flu, less cold and everything. And I don't know, you know when you see movies and you see people being grubby and like, you know, just crowds of people, or you think, I've seen like a tweet you interacted with about like being an athlete and you guys would share the same water bottle and stuff. You know, you look back at that and it's like, yo, how did I allow myself to be so fucking dirty or something, you know? So I think the mask is going to be a part of that.
I mean, like...
You're waiting to travel. I know you're
kind of... Yeah, I'm waiting to travel. I just really, like, I feel it a lot for the... Oops. I feel it a lot for the small businesses. Mm-hmm. And I feel it a lot for retail. My previous job, before the new job that I have now, which is a really great job that I have now, by the way. Congrats to me. So I had a retail job before, but it was corporate retail.
Yeah.
So to really see how the COVID has impacted... such a large retail business that I used to work for, I could only imagine what the small businesses are going through, right? When you even go down Queen Street in Toronto now, people were telling me, like, everything...
Ghost town.
...is boarded up permanently or temporarily for how many amount of months.
Queen Street's really, like, it doesn't, like, that whole Queen West thing, like, right. doesn't exist anymore. Like, yeah. It's done. There's no more Queen West, guys. It's
and,
untragic,
like, the nightlife,
you know?
Like, what's going to happen with the nightlife? Like, Toronto nightlife was already shit. I've spoken on that so many times before. I've already hated Toronto nightlife as a black person in Toronto. But it's also, like, now, like, what are we going to do with nightlife? Like, do we even have a nightlife? What is King Street in Toronto going to look like?
I think King Street will be back, you know? I think the big clubs, even if like, you know, venues change ownership or something, I still feel like people will want to be going out. And it's, like, one of the first things people are going to want to do as soon as, like, vaccinations and restrictions are lifted.
Right.
I don't know. Toronto does have a really awful party scene too. Like, I've never had, like, a good experience with it. I've never been the man at EFS every night and stuff like that. But I don't know. I feel like people want to party enough that it'll come back.
I mean, we'll see. But it's like,
they just opened patios today, like the day that we're recording this, and it's bumping. Like, I just walked past a bunch of patios.
They opened patio. I know. So patios in Toronto are officially open now.
Yeah. Like, I bet that'll already start, you know. Like, heated rooftops and stuff, you know?
If we lock back down again, then what?
I think we're going to do that, too. Like, I think the third wave is coming for us. Doug Ford fucked us up.
Doug Ford fucked us up.
Fuck Doug Ford.
I think Trudeau kind of definitely fucked us up a little bit as well with the ordering of the vaccines. But, I mean...
Yeah, they got the entire population of Canada vaccinated over in America. Your friends.
My friends?
Yeah, your friends.
Americans?
The Americans. Your best pals. You understand that I get confronted with that? That's, like, so associated with their brand, too. It's like, oh, yo, you're the podcast that shits on Toronto mans, eh? Like,
that has become my brand, and I'm okay with it. I noticed that during, like, while we're on a hiatus, and people were still talking to me about, like, so, like, why do you just prefer... That is my brand, and I'm okay with it. Me liking American whatever... Don't want to talk about it, really.
Oh, okay.
It's just my brand.
Okay. It's soft spot, eh? Okay, yo,
don't it
ask,
is a soft
don't,
spot.
Don't ask
I'm
her
being,
about it.
Because now I'm being, like, judged. People be trying to judge me for my preference of nationality of the male species. So, I mean, you know what? We're not going to talk about it. But that is my preference. And that is my brand. And if I have to use it, then I will.
No, I think rightfully so. You know, I was having a conversation with one of my friends earlier. And, like, you know, she kind of always felt like, she would get judged or shamed for wanting and preferring a man that, like, makes money or something like that, you know?
Right.
And it's like, no, I think that's fair to demand, you know? Like,
and the thing is, wait, let me be
speak on this, because I think this is a very burning topic right
is,
now, right?
So, I grew up very, I would say, privileged to an extent where I was always taken care of. You know, anything that I kind of asked for, I got, whether my mom got me or my grandparents got it from your aunts and uncles or whatever. So I also grew up seeing the women in my family work.
Yeah.
Right? So in my head, I naturally thought, you know, my parents are going 50-50. My grandparents go 50-50 because my grandmother works and she cooks and blah, 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 right? Not too long ago, actually, and I tweeted about this. Not too long ago, I had a conversation with my mom. Just talking about, like, you know, like, how did daddy, because my father passed when I was younger, which if you're new or if you've listened before, just reiterating that. So my father passed when I was 6. Mm-hmm. So I didn't really understand, like, I saw their relationship. They were a beautiful couple. You know, they had the home. They bought the dream home. They had their 2 kids, you know, whatever, whatever. Wife, father, all that good stuff.
Yeah.
But I didn't really understand, because I wasn't an adult when they were together, because he'd passed. I didn't really understand, like, the deep dynamics of their relationship, like, finances and things like that. You know, how did you afford to buy the house that you got before daddy passed and all that stuff? So I had a conversation with her, and in my head, even though my friends and I and their boyfriends always have this conversation about 50-50 rent,
what's the point of having a man if you're gonna go 50-50?
Yeah, exactly.
And like
50-50
that.
And I'm always like, you know, like, I'm never really opposed to 50-50 rent, because that's how I thought that my mom used to do
rent.
The other day, my sister and I were talking to him about, like, you know, like, so, you know, when you and daddy got the house, how did you pay bills? And she was just like, what do you mean? And I was like, you know, like, how, like, did you split the mortgage? And she was like, split the mortgage? And I was
what
like,
what kind of poverty you think
literally?
We live in?
And she was like, what do you mean? And I was like, well, like, who paid the mortgage? And she was like, your dad. And I was like, so every month he paid the mortgage on the house? And she was like, yeah. And I was like, so what did you pay? And she was like, you know, light. Water.
Get a hydro bill or two.
Yeah, hydro bill, whatever.
Yeah.
And I was just like, damn. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I feel like now that, because like I said, my parents have always been my relationship goals. Mm-hmm. Now I feel
That's amazing. More people, you should have your parents as your relationship goals.
We'll also get into relationship goals.
Oh, yes. Yes, we will.
But yeah, I feel like if you do, I understand a lot of people don't come from, you know.
Families where mom and dad
were married and they had you. Some people, you know, their parents, it was one night passion of love. Some
a lot of people.
Parents, it was, they were teenagers and, you know, you never know.
I think that's also a big testament to what people are. Like, you know, like the human being they develop into was the type of relationship your parents had and like what you saw and what your perspective is on what a good relationship looks like. You
exactly.
know?
And for me, I had that, I don't want to say it's the standard, but I had that very like cookie cutter, like parents met.
You had a good model.
Yeah. So I had that whole like, you know, mom meets dad and dad chases mom because dad had a crush on mom and then mom finally says yes. And then they fall in love and then they get married.
Dad was a real nigga.
Then they had kids 2 years later and then, you know, they had two kids and then they finally bought their house. And then obviously that was cut short for my father passing. But I definitely saw that kind of cookie cutter, what everyone goes for lifestyle right in front of my eyes. So that's always been something to me where it's like, I don't look at anyone else, like celebrity, like political, like I don't look at anyone as relationship goals. My relationship goals have always been my parents. And like people say, like, you know, a woman always, the first time a woman experiences love from the opposite sex is from her father, right? Yep. And that's how people usually say that women navigate relationships later on in life is how they were with their father.
Yes, absolutely.
How that relationship was. I was 100% a daddy's girl. You know what I mean? My dad, like, honestly, I'm not, I'm gonna let you know, I was a daddy's girl through and through. Even though I used to dance, he was the one picking me up to dance. He was the dad waiting outside ballet class. He was the dad, you know, dropping me off. He was the dad putting on my tutu. He was the dad doing my bun.
That's amazing.
So
we need more of these dads.
Right? So when I look at that, it's like, that is what I want in a man.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because, like, that love I had with my father, like, I was dying to go. I barely spoke to my mom as a kid. Like, not in a bad way, but, like, my mom and I, like, I was daddy everything.
You guys have, like, a bad relationship, you feel?
No, not at all. But, like, just, I don't know, like, I was just always gravitated to my dad.
Yeah.
And obviously, like, I love my mom, and, like, I do remember my mom in my childhood, but, like, I just, every memory I had before my dad passing was with my dad. I was literally attached to his hip. So when now as I'm older and I'm looking at those characteristics and I'm looking at, you know, that first love where you have opposite sex being your father, that was so positive and such a bright point of my life. It's like, now I understand how I navigate dating because I'm looking for similar characteristics that my father had in men that I want to, or men that I want to date long-term or eventually marry or have kids with. Like, I want those similar characteristics. And some women who don't have positive relationships with their father end up dating men or going for men who may be less than what they should be looking for. You know what I mean? Because not every man can be a father, not every woman can be a mother.
Yeah.
So I also, parents always create some issues depending on how you're raised. I believe in nurture over nature.
Likewise.
So, you know, I do feel, though, that relationship with your parents definitely affects how you navigate relationships. And that's just how I see it now. So, back to what I was saying, that changed my perspective on the whole 50-50 ring. So, I'm like, damn, like, my dad, who, you know,
and,
like,
and why should I expect anything less from you bitch-ass niggas?
That, too.
If this is what my dad did, why should I think anybody should do less than that?
And, thing is, and if you're a man who doesn't believe
women
in that.
Women get shamed for that, thinking that. Yeah.
And if you're a man who doesn't believe in that, that's for you.
Yeah.
But I'm letting you know, as Zoe, I was brought up in a household where my father, and even though I didn't know that at the time, he took care of most things financially. So why now, if that's what I've been shown in my life, and I've also seen the side of being an independent woman because my mother was a single mother for how many years?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? 18 years. She was a single mother.
Yeah.
So I see both sides of having that strong male figure and also being that independent single mother woman.
Mm.
You know what I mean? And that obviously wasn't by choice. But like I said,
I think a lot of like these men that are almost want women to, like, you know, not have a higher standard and stuff, you know, may have come from a lot of those types of relationships where they didn't also have, like, you know, a good man to, like, look at, you know, so they expect, they have, like, a warped view of perspectives, you know, a warped perspective on relationships. You know, I can definitely say to, you know, although my, both of us have, like, different upbringings, you know, parents being of different races, you know, my mom is a Caucasian woman, my dad's from Trinidad, and they didn't, like, they're divorced now and everything, and they didn't have, like, a good relationship, you know?
Right.
They loved each other, you know, and they wanted to be, they still talk to this day. I can get more into that, too, but, yeah, not, and I never really saw, like, a healthy relationship growing up, you know? And I feel like that, as a grown-ass man now, I can definitely see, you know, how that affects how I navigate relationships and how, you know, it affects dating for me in a negative way sometimes.
Right.
And then I can also see, like, how it gives me the strength and it's given me the knowledge to navigate it a different way, too. So it's like, all the ain't shit, like, men and stuff like that, I feel like didn't have, like, a good example either. They didn't, they don't know that that's the standard that, like, that's what they need to be at, you know? Like, that's where they need to take it, 'cause they... You know, it's boohoo, sad story, Black American dad story, right? Like, it's cliche.
Yeah. It's weird. And I think,
and it's why we attach to, like, relationship goals and shit like that, you know? Why we kind of put those things on a pedestal, I feel like, not to get cliche with it, but as Black people, you know, collectively, you know, we our family unit, you know, there's... The family structure, the traditional cookie cutter, like, thing, like what you're saying, isn't common for us.
Right.
So, and you can read all the academic papers about the destruction of the Black family and stuff like that and why it's not there. And mostly it's the lack of strong Black men.
Right.
You know? Black women are always there.
Right.
You know, I feel like they're bearing most of the weight and stuff like that. So I feel like it's really a responsibility mostly up to Black men at this point to, like, have that be more normal, what you're kind of saying, you know? Like, you know, my dad was there picking me up on ballet. He was doing my bun and stuff like that. I feel like maybe it's just my unique perspective, too, and the people I've known growing up, but it's like, I feel like, damn, I should hear more of that. I don't know as... That's less common for me, hearing that, you know? So
yeah, and I mean, like, even, like I said, even looking at other relationships that I know personally, whether in my family or friends, it's like, there's just certain things that may occur that I just see from the outside looking in. I'm just like, I don't even want that. And like I said, I don't think I've ever been in love, per se.
Really?
I mean, I think, like, I've, like,
really
liked men or my past relationships, and I think I've been, you know, like, super infatuated.
But you've never been in love.
I don't think I've genuine, because I also, like, I'm cliche, like, I believe, like, love never fails, right?
So you feel like if you love someone, you're gonna love them for the
rest
of your life. Yeah.
And all my exes, I don't give a fuck about any of them niggas.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it's like, I clearly didn't love y'all. You know what I mean? Like, it was more just, like, in the moment, like, infatuation, whatever, whatever. I feel like, have I gotten close to love? Maybe. But I also have to realize that not, like I said.
Not everybody's worthy of that.
Relationship goals and looking at other people's relationships and trying to mirror it is the most damaging thing that you can do if you are single and navigating dating. And I'm telling you this because not every love story looks the same. Not every love story is gonna come with ease, and not every love story is gonna come with, you know, when I meet you across the bar and we fall in love, you never disappoint me. No, that's not.
This is how men justify cheating, though, too.
Why?
They'll be like, you know, not every relationship is perfect, you know? Like, I feel like,
Not every relationship is perfect!
I agree with this sentiment. I just feel like a lot of, like, maybe toxic people and stuff can conflate this with, like, oh, you let a little bit of cheating damage your relationship and stuff,
no.
You know? Like, you know how people will take that and
don't
turn it
that.
Into that?
No. For all the niggas who are doing that, don't do that. Because that's not what I'm saying.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is, people need to realize that people are only going to show you the... No one's posting the crazy shit that's happening in their life most of the time.
Social media's a highlight
reel. No one's posting the sad story. Your family is not telling you what really, really, really goes on in their relationship. You know what I mean? They're not showing you... Like I said, you never know what goes on behind closed doors, right?
Like, you can see a video of Sweetie and Quavo, and he throws the snow in the air and stuff like that.
That
looks
so... That could be Jordan.
No, there's Quavo one, too.
Michael B. Jordan threw the snow in the air with
Lauren. No, so did Quavo. Don't worry, it'll be right here.
Yeah. So anyways, if that happened, whatever. They're not my relationship goals. We'll get into that's whatever. That's them. But like I said, see, people who maybe don't have real life relationship goals or examples are gonna
all they have to go off is that.
That they're gonna go off all like the Beyonce and the Jay-Z, the Kim and Kanye who are also divorced, the Sweetie and Quavo, the Cardi and Offset, all trash examples, by the way, because we don't fucking know these people. Mm-hmm. We do not know the ins and outs. I don't even know the ins and outs of my uncle, my aunt and uncle's marriages or my cousin's marriages, you know what I mean? So how can I really mirror my relationship of them that I genuinely do not know from the ins and outs? I don't know what my grandfather forgave my grandfather or mother for doing and vice versa. You know what I mean? That is literally for you to know. I know myself that I won't be able to forgive cheating. So like, just because you see Cardi B forgive and hop in a Bentley with her name on it, is that gonna change your whole perspective now? I'm telling you, detrimental.
It is detrimental. I think
people need to know themselves. That's the problem. People need to know themselves.
And know, like, what they're worth and, like, believe in that, too, you know? Because, and just know, like, what that takes. And I feel like I spoke on, like, my sort of situation with my parents, you know, them not having a good relationship, them not having a healthy marriage, but, like, the love and the bond that they had between them, you know? Like, after they were separated and divorced for years and stuff, like, my dad was sick and in the hospital, and then, like, my mother was the only person that would, you know, take him in and, you know, nurture him and stuff. I'm, like, I'm generalizing a lot, but basically, like, my mom had been divorced from my dad for years and years, and when he needed somebody to, like, basically teach him how to, like walk again and be able to go to the washroom, you know, like, he had some very serious health problems and stuff, and, like, you know, there's still all this baggage from, like, a bad marriage and stuff, and my mom's there getting him, you know, his medical insurance and stuff like that, getting him long-term care facilities and stuff, and it's just, like, I realized, you know, and my mom was, like, a strong woman and endured a lot in her marriage and stuff, and still to have all of that, all this negative stuff happen, also not to, like, put that on my dad, you know, like, he had a lot that, like, he was, I guess, experiencing at the time, too, but to have, like, a not healthy marriage and to not see him for years and then, you know, him kind of be in and out of my life and stuff like that even for the time being, and then him get sick and my mom still be there for him like that, it's just, like, I don't know what that love even feels like, you know? Right. I've been in love. I've had relationships where I've been in love with people. I don't think I've ever loved somebody enough that, like, after them cheating or like, you know, an awful, like, relationship or something like that, if I would still have the love to, like, tend and care for them, for their well-being, you know, like, it's just a different kind of love, and it's, like, you need to know, like, if you care about somebody well enough, especially as a man, right, like, you gotta provide for a woman, you're supposed to be a provider, I believe that, you know, so if you're gonna be taking care of a woman, you know, you're gonna be paying for her bills and stuff like that, you really gotta love most of the bills. Most
what bills you pay?
Majority of the bills.
What
the
bills?
Mortgage, the car, no, you know, the big ones.
You pay the car.
Yeah, we'll take care of it. Yeah. You know, you can get a 1-2.
You heard it here first.
You can get a 1-2 hydro and stuff like that. No, seriously. But, like, you need to really believe that your woman is worth that, you know? Right. You can't, like, half-ass this. You can't kind of like a girl and then get in a situation like that and then be mad that you have to pay bills for a woman and stuff, you know? Mm. So it's like, when I speak of that deep love, like, yo, do you love this woman enough that you're gonna want to actually provide for her, you know? Right. And I feel like a lot of men jump the gun and stuff, and they don't.
That's a good question. Do you love this woman enough that you'd want to provide for her? For all these men who refuse to be the man who pays 100% of the rent, blah, blah, do you think that you're just saying that because that's genuinely how you feel, or you've never loved a woman enough to be that person, to be that provider for them?
Exactly. Because, like, I don't like the, like, at surface level, you don't like the idea of that, having to pay for somebody else's life or anything like that. But I've been in relationships, I've loved somebody, and I've not wanted my girl to pay for the fucking bill or whatever, you know? I want to do that for her. I like doing stuff. I don't know if that's me. I'm a people
pleaser,
though, too.
They're gonna call you a pick-me.
Really? I'm in pick-me territory already. Wow. No, That's the kind of person I am. I'm certified. I'm a Scorpio. I like doing that. But you gotta love your woman enough to do that, you know.
Right.
And don't put yourself in that situation if you know that that's not how you feel.
Yeah. And
with my pick me self.
Like I said, the whole celebrity relationships being people's relationship goals and so on and so forth. It's damaging. And seeing all that like Saweetie and Quavo shit play out, and then like seeing all these women like, yes, girl, like, fuck the gifts, blah, blah. It was like, okay, like, here we are. We're going to run with this again.
Exhausting.
Now it's fuck the gifts and all that shit. But when she was getting the Birkins and she was twerking, it was my man has to get me a Birkin if this and that.
I think that's really interesting too. Yeah. How
but do you think these women are negative, like, role models to maybe women who are younger?
A girl like Saweetie
or like Cardi B or even Jada, who they, you know, they're publicly.
I maybe that last woman I would kind of keep Jada? At it. Yeah, maybe I don't know. I don't look at her as the same way as I see
well,
someone.
Well, Jada's
like,
Lil Baby's girl or baby mom or whatever.
Yeah, Lil Baby's baby mama. But like, I think Cardi and Saweetie are kind of in different territory. You know, I think they're great examples, and I think you know what?
They're great examples for younger women.
I think, yeah, in many respects. I think Cardi's kind of getting torn apart for her WAP performance on the Grammys right now, but I think...
But I mean, like, do you think that they're good examples relationship-wise on how you think women... Actually, like, I feel like Tarte would say, should navigate relationships.
I think the way that...
Even though they shouldn't model them off celebrities in general, but do you think that younger women are looking at these women and seeing them, you know, get gifts and cars and all this stuff? Do you think that's changing or shifting that mindset? Also, when it comes to like love languages and stuff like that, your love language is, and I'll let you know this right now, your love language changes as you start dating more and you start getting more exposed to different love language. For example, my love language was never, I never really cared for receiving gifts. My love language was, oh, fuck, what are all of them?
I don't fully understand the gifts thing, man.
Acts of service was, my number one. Yeah. And then, quality time, physical, quality time, whatever, all that stuff. But, I always put receiving gifts last. Until I met a man who would buy me gifts.
Who would send you Jordans.
Until I met a man who, you know, would get me gifts.
He got me the ones, the baby blues, jeez.
And I was like, oh, this is nice. This feels nice because, maybe it's because I never had to ask for it, and I never asked for anything from him. Mm-hmm. Or you hint at certain things that you may like, but it's never like, hey, can you get me this?
Yeah.
Or hey, I'd really like this from you. I've never done that with any man, but I think receiving those nice things, you know, whether it's like a trip paid for or a bag or shoes.
I think,
nice to feel okay, this person thought about me.
It's okay for that to be your standard, and women get shamed for that not being their standard.
Exactly.
I think I'm getting into pick me territory again, but I think if that's what you're used to and the type of men that you like are always doing that for you, then why the fuck should you expect less?
Right.
I think that's the big theme we're getting at
it's okay
this episode
to have your love languages change as you start navigating new relationships. Like I said, I never really cared for receiving gifts, but now that I dealt with a man who, you know, got me things that was, you know, that I just, it wasn't like he got me extravagant Chanel, blah, 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 but you know what I mean? It's this is, I really wanted this and I like this.
I'd like to dissect this a little bit because I'm struggling to understand it. It makes sense, but then it's the whole gift giving thing and that being your love language, so why is that significant? Is it the thoughtfulness of it? Because it seems like materialism is attached to the whole
It can gift. Get very materialistic.
Yeah.
It definitely can.
Where is this distinction there where it's you know, if a man buys you a really expensive bag, that's what you want. But if a guy were to do something very thoughtful that isn't expensive or something. What's something really corny and cheap? The whole 52 card thing, writing something you like about her on every single card on a deck of cards or something like that. Or writing the letters, open this when, you know, that's technically a gift and that's very thoughtful. But it's I don't know if that meets the criteria of what love language gift receiving is, you know? So how do you navigate? How does that work for you?
for me, it's definitely more of the thoughtfulness of it. You know what I mean? Like, if it's not something I have to really, like, ask for, or if it's something that comes kind of, like, out of the blue, or if it's not something where it's, like, I fucked up, here's a bag, or I fucked up, and here's a pair of diamond earrings. Like, that's different. If you're fucking up, receiving gifts is not my, like, there's no more love language. If you're consistently fucking up, you can't just buy me shit, and I'm gonna be okay with it, right? If we're on really good terms, and it's a random day, and you send me 2 dozen roses, I like shit like that. Yeah, like, that's gonna make me feel good, you know what I mean? Or if it's like, hey, like, I know you really wanted these Jordans, you're posting them all over your story, like, here they are. Or like, hey, like, you offered to get these for me and you couldn't get them, well, I got these for you. You know what I mean? That's how I like receiving gifts. But if it's like, I fucked another girl last month.
Yeah, found out.
And now you're pissed, but here's a Louis Vuitton bag or here's a Chanel bag. Nigga, fuck you and your gift.
Because that's what I associated with a lot.
Because now that's how receiving gifts as a love language is being portrayed.
It's guilt.
Niggas fucking up.
It's guilt.
And women taking shit from them.
Yeah.
Right? And it's shown in our faces through all these, what, celebrity-ass relationships. It's niggas fucking up. And even though half these relationships are businesses, in my opinion, I don't think most of these relationships that celebrities have are real.
I don't think Lori Harvey and Michael B are together.
Oh, well, that's another topic.
Yeah, it is.
But like I said, it's the way that receiving gifts is shown as a love language through these celebrities is your nigga fucked up. It's public now. And now he got you a
Well, then to bring it back to one of the first things you asked, like, are these relationships, these public relationships, like, a good example for young girls? I think in that aspect, it can be negative, you know?
Yeah.
Girls can be like, okay, he can cheat on me, but as long as he buys me a Birkin after, you know, then we're good, you know? And I think that can be a toxic perspective that can stem from that.
Right.
But I think, also, I don't know, you said Cardi and Sweetie. I think Cardi is a good example of, like,
and
not everybody's relationship's the same, you know? Yeah. Like, not everybody, you know, her and Offset and taking Offset back and whatnot. You know, so many women and men judge her for that, you know? And it's kind of like, you don't know, like, what's going on behind closed doors. They have kids and whatnot.
That's
that
true
that
too.
Makes it different. On the whole, celebrity goals, relationships and stuff like that. There's one thing that stemmed from the Sweetie thing that I want to talk about that, like, actually kind of, like, I'm at odds with, I feel like, with relationships. You know, when Sweetie tweeted and she's saying how, you know, I've kind of been emotionally distant for a while now,
right,
and stuff.
Right.
She kind of expressed
she was emotionally clocked out, basically.
Yo, women do that. Like, in a relationship, I find, like, at least a lot of relationships, like, in hindsight, I can look back and see that was definitely taking place where, you know, the woman, like, breaks up with you, essentially,
in
like, weeks and months in advance. Yeah. And it's like, you're just, and then as a man, when it happens to you, sometimes it's so blindsiding. Maybe you kind of have an idea of it, maybe you don't, but then it's like, it just, you're just confronted with it, and then she's so 10 steps ahead of you, she's already ready to go see other people and stuff, and I just feel like, oh, that's such a, like, I don't know. That's been something I've had to deal with before. And I'm like, damn, like, why? Like, why women do that? Like,
right.
Like, always, I'm not saying it is, like, a bad thing. Maybe men should start doing that. maybe.
I think people should stop doing that.
Yeah.
I feel like women can be a little bit more passive. And I feel like maybe women sometimes, you know, suppress. Like, they might have that initial thought, like, oh, I really don't like this nigga anymore. But then they suppress it.
Yeah.
It builds up, right?
Yeah, they pretend like, okay, no, they give him more chances and stuff like that.
Or,
yeah.
You know, the nigga fucks up and gives them something. You know, some women, like I said, sometimes they can be more passive and they suppress all those feelings because they just received something nice or he did, like, this crazy grand gesture or he cried or whatever that looks like, right?
He cried?
Yeah. A lot of girls, when niggas cry, they're like, oh my God, he cried. And I'm like,
it's a game changer when a nigga cries. How do you feel when a dude cries in front of you?
What's he crying about? Me?
Something to do with you guys. Because women also say, too, like, when niggas fuck up, they start crying and, like, that. Like, they threaten to kill themselves and stuff like that. Like,
I've never had a man threaten to kill himself.
Well, okay, like, let's also be careful with this topic, too,
right.
I guess,
yeah.
right?
Like, yeah.
That is a toxic thing. Like, yeah. that is very manipulative, like, right. a thing that men do. I see that being talked about a lot, where mm-hmm. it's like, you know, even men joke about it. Like,
I think both men, I've heard women doing that as well, though.
Okay, yeah.
So, yeah, I've definitely heard women, you know, threatening to harm themselves if you leave me or... People can be nasty when relationships
yeah.
are...
manipulative.
A thing.
I think I've seen this word more than I ever have in the last week, gaslighting.
God,
you know,
right.
which is kind of like what they're saying Quavo did, right? And like, all like,
you're not the woman who I thought you were.
Yeah, that first of all, wow, man! Like the audacity. Like, we thought y'all won was a bar. Nah, that fucking.
The thing is,
you're not who I thought I was.
I also believe that men will be who you allow them to be, right?
Yes.
So when you start allowing fuck shit, and when you start accepting things and forgiving certain things and not voicing your issues, a nigga's always going to use that.
Yeah.
If you don't know that you not texting her good morning every morning is pissing her off, what are you going to do? You're going to continue not to text her good morning every morning. Mm-hmm. Unless she says something, right?
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, a nigga is going to be what you allow him to be.
What you put up with.
If you're going to allow for a nigga to be ain't shit, he's always going to be ain't shit. And if you don't allow it, and he still ain't shit, then...
That's on you?
That's on you.
Fool me once, shame on you.
And like I said, not every love story is the same. Not every love story is rainbows and smooth sailing and all this great stuff and long captions. No one's ever going to put in their Instagram caption, you know, like, he really fucked up in the beginning, and we had a rough time. It's always gonna be, you've never disappointed me.
Yeah, you see men doing that, though.
Right? Yeah, exactly, that too. But it's gonna be like, you never disappointed me, you're the love of my life. You know what I mean? From day one, like, yes. But there's, I promise you, like, just the way that natural human beings are, nothing is smooth sailing.
I don't know, it hurts my heart when I see the dude with his girl, and he's behind her, and he's hugging, it's the caption like, oh, we've been through some ups and downs, right, and you know. Right. She's taken me back so many times. Like, it's just, oh, I heard, like, are you not embarrassed? You know, like.
Are you not embarrassed?
Like. Like, yeah. But I think that's, like, kind of the theme, is women are developing higher standards as they should and putting up with less. And I love that for them.
Hopefully.
I like seeing that.
I think we are. I think it's a slow burner. Uh-huh. But I think women are getting, because like I said, women, we go through a lot.
Well, yeah, like, the first thing we started...
And I feel
with,
like, we'll, as the season goes on, we'll talk to other men about this. But, like, women are just... We just... A lot of shit we gotta do. We have to have kids. You know, we're expected to do things. We bleed once a month, and that shit's painful as fuck.
That, yeah, I have no idea what that's like, but, you know.
We get paid less.
Yeah, there's...
Sexually assaulted. And that happens to men, too, but not as much as it happens to women.
Yeah, I just think it's like...
Men need to understand...
When men try and be obtuse and like deny this stuff, right. I think is like the issue, you know? And it's, I think it's on other men to call that shit out, you know?
Right.
And be like, nah, nigga, you're wrong and stuff. We need more of that.
Men need to understand, like, genuinely the difficulties of being a woman. And when we can get to that point, then we can start having better conversations. But men, I think there's a lot of men who genuinely don't understand. And yes, you know, I'm a feminist and I believe in equality of the sexes, but just the way the world has worked, men have to understand that we can never really reach equality because at some point,
yeah.
women will always be deemed as inferior.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. What would you like to see men... this is such a, you know, it's like
that cliche.
Yeah, yeah.
What can men do better?
Because I also really believe it's not on fucking women to like
right.
police men. Well, like not tell them how to be better to women. You
right.
know, like I feel like it's on us to figure out. But like, what would you like to see men doing differently? Then I guess
just simple understanding.
Yeah,
it's for me at least. It's that simple. You have to understand the thoughts that women have to have when they're walking alone on the street. You have to understand the thoughts that women have when their bodies are changing because there's a human growing inside of them, right? Women literally give life. Even though it's half a man, you know.
Nah, women give life. It's all women.
We do give life, yes. Even though you do, you shoot up the club and fertilize the egg.
We hold your hand while you're going.
Yeah, to see, me now being 24 and fairly fit, just the thought of me seeing my body change physically and having a human grow inside of you meant me to understand what that feels like. And you would never completely understand because you'll never go through it. But you'll have to understand how they may feel, like how that may affect your self-esteem. Hormones are a crazy fucking thing.
Yeah.
Right?
And as a woman, we know.
Exactly. And as a woman, your hormones are constantly changing from your menstrual cycle. That happens every month. And then your hormones are changing from when you're fertile and when you have kids and when you give birth and all that stuff, right? And then when you go through menopause, hormones are constantly fluctuating as a woman, right? That can have an effect on you in a great deal. Men just need, I need more understanding, right? That's all it is. It's just literally understanding and recognizing the differences of being a man versus being a woman, the privileges that being a man can have.
Yeah, I think, it's like, as a man, I feel like you can, if you're hyper aware of those types of things, you'll almost learn like a new thing every day. You'll see a different thing every day. Something I saw that I think is progressive that people were kind of talking about how they're putting sexual education in like as young as like age 8 or something like that, like very young, like, or they're putting it in kindergarten or something.
Right.
And I just feel like that is maybe, I don't know, maybe you feel a way about that, but I think that's kind of something that like is good, you know? You should be introducing, you know, sex ed at a very young age. And that doesn't mean, like, sex and penetration and all that kind of shit. It's, like, labeling body parts, understanding what's normal, those hormone-type things, you know, understanding, you know, how that can affect a human being, a woman. So I think that's a productive thing that's going on.
Yeah, and I agree with you. Even though, like, my aunt, she has a... Oh, my God, how old is he? 13-year-old son. He's going to be 14. Mm. And she was, like, upset. She was like, oh, my God, they're going to start talking to him about, like, this stuff, you know, back when he was younger. Like, oh, my God, they're introducing, like, all this stuff. And I'm like, yeah, they need to start teaching kids about this stuff from a younger age. Some girls have their period as early as 9 years old, 8 years old sometimes. You know how frightening that is?
Men, no.
Exactly. You remember, like, as a woman, like, you're, for at least for me, like, my first period, I was like, oh, fuck. Like, this shit's real. Because you learn about it in school, right? And they tell you, you're going to bleed once a month. And, you know, sometimes you may have cramping. And it can range from mild or non-existent to extreme.
Yeah.
You'll have backaches. You'll have cravings. You'll break out.
Mm-hmm.
Your hormones will be out of whack. Sometimes your flow may be... Oh, I'm getting really deep. Sorry. Sometimes,
your body,
whatever, right? They teach you all that shit. Okay, cool. So it's going to happen to me one day. The day that actually happens is a completely different story from what you learn in school, which is why I think it should really be put into girls' heads, you know? This is what to expect. Because the day it happens, and you're going to have this shit for the rest of your life until you go through menopause or until you have a child.
I think what's so damning about that, too, is like when you think about
pads and tampons should be free.
Pads and tampons, you know.
I didn't ask to do this.
You know, tampon was a male invention.
That was it?
A man invented the tampon. And then it's just, when you think of, like, the concept of a tampon on paper, it kind of makes sense, you know? Like,
right.
I feel like a pad makes more sense, you know? You don't have to, you know, there isn't all that stuff. Maybe I can get a good visual to put right here to but I don't need to go in too depth about that. But it's like, it just seems like a man's solution to a woman's
just
problem.
Plug it up.
Yeah.
I don't want to see it. Absorb that shit from the jump.
And like, I think, you know, if we're talking about understanding, I think that... having, like, the perspectives men have on women body parts, sex and stuff like that is... bleeds into our relationships and how we treat women every day. And something we kind of saw in the media, going back to the Quavo and Sweetie thing, was, you know, Sweetie made a comment about, you know, what her preference for a threesome would be. And she's saying, you know, if I'm having a threesome, I want you to call, like, your homie, you know?
Yeah.
I prefer two guys, you know? And this is actually, I want to address this because Maybe this is my first episode co-hosting.
We've had this conversation.
Yeah.
But not you, but we
No. I had a mic. This was the first time I ever had a mic, you know, and we had a conversation about trains and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And I kind of said that classic misogynistic thing that guys always kind of think that, like, two guys and a girl, that's a train, you know? There's no way that that could be a threesome.
Right.
And, you know, I feel like since that and, you know, this sweetie thing, and I've thought about it more, you know, I feel like that perspective that I had was wrong, you know? Like, obvious, I think.
Look at you unpacking.
Yeah, like, this is what we're doing, right? This is Relentless Diaries, this is what we're here for, you know? And I think that's an easy misogynistic thing for guys to fall into. Like, I used to think that, nah, you know, two girls and a guy is a train, when, nah, obviously, there can be group sex with two guys and a girl, you know, and that doesn't mean it's a train. And I think the reason men think that is the way that we think about sex. It's something that we do to a woman, you know?
Right.
It's something that we achieve, and it's very, like, it's, like, very selfish, you know, when sex is a very mutual thing. It's a team sport, you know?
Right, so, it is a team sport, you're right.
So I think the whole understanding of women will change things like that, the way we have perspectivized, I don't think that's a word, sex, you know? But you can have a threesome with two guys and a girl.
Right.
Two guys and a girl. Yes. Two guys and a girl. That doesn't make it a train.
MMF. Male, male, female.
Jeez, you know threesome. your Pornhub categories, right? Eh?
I just saw that on Twitter once, and I was like, what's MMF? And they were like, male, but I'm like, okay.
I don't know. That sounds very Pornhub-esque.
Yeah, like, I feel it like just, it is. You know, I've never seen a male, female.
You know, maybe if I have any hot take about that concept, I personally think this is just, you know.
But I feel like the thing is also because men and homophobia,
yes,
men are just scared to get naked in front of another man.
Well, this is where I was going with it.
Okay.
Is that just?
Which is why they call it a dream, right?
I guess, right? I personally, I don't think I could be involved with either things. Like, I couldn't run a train or be in a threesome. I couldn't do either one.
You never had a threesome?
No.
Why?
With two girls and me? No, yeah. I don't have it like that yet.
Yet! So you would be open
oh,
to
I'd
having
be
a threesome.
With two girls.
But not a man and a woman.
Yeah.
And let me
get there and explain that too. I don't think it's something of, like, for myself, I don't think it's an element of homophobia. I personally just feel like I wouldn't be comfortable with another man naked in the room. Like, genuinely, that would just put me off. That would make me very, very uncomfortable. I don't think, like, that's just how I feel.
Right.
Some other men can be hard at the same time as another guy in the room, and they can see that, and that won't be an issue for them.
Right.
Does that mean you're gay? No, you know, but I couldn't get with that, you know, for like that reason. I couldn't be in the same room as another man naked and be stimulated as something.
Be stimulated, okay.
That couldn't take place for me, so a train, a threesome, I couldn't take part. I'm exclusive to just two women.
So
if I were to do a threesome, which is pretty ambitious, I think, too. Two women, that's a lot to...
I don't think it's ambitious. I know a lot of ugly niggas who've had threesomes.
Oh, I could pull it off. I'm not saying it's impossible. I'm just saying you can't half-ass that. You gotta come in ready with your game.
That's very true. I just think...
What do you think? Yeah.
I don't know. I've never... I don't really want to even talk too much about this. Like, personally?
No, I know. I had to unpack what I said,
listening.
You know? Yeah.
But I've never, like, had a actual threesome. I've had, like...
You've scratched the surface of it. You've checked some boxes, but didn't meet the full criteria,
you know, like,
and stuff.
Little, like,
you got called back for the interview, but didn't get the full job,
not
you know?
That. But, you know, I've had, like, situations where, you know, there was, you know, maybe a girl was...
Also
trying
there?
To do something more, you know, maybe like a little something. I've never had sex with a woman and a man, or two men and me ever, like, simultaneously. That's never happened.
But there's been...
Have I, you know, been in a three type of situation thingamajig? Yes.
Ah!
But...
How was that? Was it a good experience? Did you enjoy it? Would you do it again?
I was really young.
Yeah.
And I don't really think, like, I don't know. Because the thing is, like, I love women.
Mm, me too.
But, like, I'm not, like, sexually, like, if I see a really pretty girl, I'm like, oh my god, this girl's so beautiful. Like, I'll gasp. Oh my god, girl, you are so fucking pretty. Like, your ass is so fat. I fucking love your boobs. Let me touch it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But, like, I don't get turned on. Like, my pussy doesn't jump when I see a nice pair of titties. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I just love seeing girls with nice titties. Yeah. But I'm not getting turned on when I see nice titties.
I think
want to touch them, though. And I'd want to smack your ass because it's fat. But I don't want to, I'm not getting turned on.
That I think that makes a lot of sense. And I think that's why women can, like, platonically, like, kiss each other or make out.
Right.
Like, you know, two straight women can make out with each other.
And, like, even my friends, like, I've been naked around my friends all the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, we've traveled together, been in hotel rooms. We've had to, you know, get naked in front of each other because we're changing or whatever, whatever. We don't give a fuck.
I think the reason we
all have the same body parts.
That differs from men because literally women are fucking amazing. Like, women are just very beautiful, elegant. I don't want to say creatures. That would defeat everything I said before that.
Dead.
But, you know, women are very beautiful, are so beautiful and elegant that a straight woman can recognize just how beautiful a woman. Like, you're saying that, you know, like what
100%.
You're saying. So that could happen. Two straight girls can make out and it could be a thing. Men aren't that beautiful and elegant. I can't. I could see Michael B. Jordan and Idris Elba, and as far as it can go, I can be like, you know, I see why girls like that,
they
those two guys, you know? Those seem like guys that woman would be attracted to. Could I make out with another guy platonically? No, that would never happen. That could never take place, ever. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, so, and I think that just goes back, not no homophobia or anything, that just goes back to the fact that women are just way more graceful, elegant, and beautiful than men. That's why two straight women can make out.
Fair. But yeah.
That's my perspective. That's my perspective.
No, I think that's a fair perspective. And like I said, I also feel like if I ever were to engage in a threesome, like an actual like sexual threesome, I don't think I could do it with my man. And I've always said that. I don't think that's something that I could do with like the man that like I love this man. I don't think I'd be able to.
That's a good point. It does seem like something you do when you're young and you're not in a solid.
I'm also
solid.
Like a little bit crazy.
You get jealous?
Not even jealous, just like, no, fuck you. Like, no, don't fuck her. And I don't want to see it.
You know, I've never had a threesome. I've had bare opportunities for a threesome and didn't because of this reason. Is that like, I'm in a relationship and it's like, I feel like this would kind of mess it up, you know?
With a girl, another girl?
Yeah.
Right, okay.
It's like, we're so comfortable with each other that we could introduce something like that. And I feel like if we tried to introduce something like that too early, then it would fuck things up, you know?
Fair.
Yeah, so if you're going to do threesomes, gotta be, think that shit through.
Yeah, and I've had girls like try to do stuff with me and I'm just I don't really like that.
Because people can be predatory like with that, you know? Like couples and even like when they, like
when
I've
they
seen
try
on.
To, like, what's it called? Like, what's the word I'm looking for?
Swingers?
No, when they try to like scout.
Yes.
Scout women for threesomes and
on
all
some
that stuff.
TI and Tiny.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Those are allegations.
Yeah.
That stuff's crazy.
Yeah. But all in all, people need to unpack that there are threesomes that are male. And we spoke about this before on previous episodes.
Where I was wrong, and I'm unpacking
that.
Now.
You're unpacking that.
That I
male,
had.
Male, female is. A threesome.
Is it? Yeah, that can be a threesome.
Female, male is also a threesome because maybe because men think that the man, like maybe because they think that the men aren't having sex, that it's a train.
What do you
is
mean?
Is that why? Because usually, because like female, maybe in a threesome, because like when there's two women and a man, you know, the girl's eating the girl out, vice versa, the guy's fucking both of them.
Yeah.
That's sex three ways, right?
Yeah.
Maybe
yeah.
the girl has a toy, she's using it on the other girl, vice versa. That's technically three-way sex, because that's also how same-sex sex works between women.
Yes.
Right? It's
yes.
dildos and strap-ons and
all that good
oral,
stuff.
All that stuff. But maybe when it's male-male, because the two men most likely aren't interacting and having sex or like kissing with each other, they're just basically fucking that girl. Maybe that's why it's considered a train, even though it's still a threesome.
And maybe there
are men who are bisexual who are doing that.
I've heard of
I
that.
I don't know.
That is a very interesting concept that I think is I hear less about.
That is a very interesting concept.
No, it's interesting. Like, it's uncommon. That's wow, you know? Like, holy. You're bold, you know?
No, my God.
No, the concept of a bisexual man, too, is pretty... It's different than a woman, you know?
I feel like it might... Which I've also learned and unpacked. I feel like it might be harder to be a bisexual man...
Yeah.
...than it is to be a bisexual woman.
You've gotten into this on Twitter before.
Yeah, we're not going to get into it today. That's what the fuck we're not going to do.
But I also... I think that, you know, without getting too much about, like, what you said about it before, you know, I think it's okay for... a woman to be like, oh, well,
yeah.
Actually, I don't know.
Next topic.
yeah. Let's.
Next topic.
I don't know. Guys. I don't know about that one. Actually,
we need to have more. Yeah, we need to have more wine, and we need to have more people on this topic, because I've had to unpack the situation as to why people may feel that way, which is fair and which is valid arguments as well.
Yeah, I think let's leave it there. I don't know if I'm the person to be making these distinctions. And
we're
and
both
stuff
heterosexual
like
people, so it might be hard for us to speak on experiences of a community that we're not a part
of.
I would
love to speak to someone who has way more insight on this that is their life, you know? But we'll leave that right there.
But I mean,
shout out to everybody's sexual preference.
Exactly.
That, you know,
shout out to all the pairs. Shout out to all the people who
sexual preferences aren't fruit, Zoe. Stop comparing people's sexual preferences to fruit. It's not pears and oranges.
Shout out to everyone who wants to fuck who you want to fuck. That's how life is. But you know, like I said, we're mid-March of 2021.
Mm-hmm.
It's season 2 of the Relentless Diaries. We have great things planned.
It was 15 degrees today, and it hasn't been that warm for a long time.
Good things are coming, and you know, I feel like every month is something new.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just to kind of quickly just touch on, I would say, I don't want to go political, but you know, social issues. You know, while we were away, the Meghan Markle thing happened, which we didn't touch on because we weren't recording in real time.
But I was salivating, like wanting to talk about
right,
that.
Right, so the Meghan Markle situation happened.
And then right now.
We also saw recently the lives that were taken of 8 Asian individuals. I don't know if all victims were Asian.
I think
maybe
there was
6, right?
6 of them. 6. But they were all women.
Yes.
And I think that's another main part of the
right.
What were the movement right now and everything?
Right.
Anti-Asian racism
right.
is a very big issue and something that kind of gets glossed over, maybe because that, you know, there's a lot of oppressed demographics of people, you know, obviously Black people being at the forefront a lot of those conversations. So I think a lot of the time, and I've had Asian friends express this to me that, you know, Their issues and their struggles and their play kind of gets put on the back burner sometimes. At least this is how they feel, you know?
Right.
Maybe that's not a fair way to articulate how they feel, you know?
Right.
But it's like a lot of the time people are talking about Black issues, right? And especially with the Black Lives Matter movement that happened recently. So, but then when these atrocities happen, you know, it's kind of something that we can't gloss over. And it's something that is very rampant, you know? So many of my Asian friends said the treatment that they got just in society was different after coronavirus became more rampant. And
100%.
It's just the way people associate that with, associate the coronavirus with Asian people is very similar to, I feel like, when 9/11 happened. And so many people associated Muslim people and Middle Eastern people, which is, you know, wrong and racist and bigoted to think that. So we're seeing that manifest right now with these atrocities. And I think this is probably the more difficult part of the conversation. I think there's a lot of Black people who are very strong and adamant about Black issues. So when they're also, you know, they're looked at as maybe an activist or someone who's always outspoken about issues, they're asked to, you know, what about Asian issues? You know, why aren't you speaking about this, you know? And then, you know, I've seen a few perspectives where it's kind of like Black people will, they'll kind of be like, look, yeah, like Asian issues like are a thing, but they'll kind of bring up the conflicts that Black and Asian people have had, you know? And they'll kind of, you know, introduce that to that conversation that we're having about anti-Asian hate. And then I feel like that's a valid concern, you know, like, and it's something that us as Black people go through. But I think it can, I'm just trying to be neutral bringing it up, you know, right. I think it can be, it can make things difficult sometimes, you know. I've seen a lot of back and forth. I've seen a lot of clashing and conflict, like, at that part of the conversation, you know, where Black and Asian people being united, and Black people, I think NBC put out an article saying, how can Black people be better allies, right? And I think that was the catalyst for this conversation, at least on social media, you know? So, yeah, how do you feel about all that?
My thing is, as a person who is pro-Black through and through, as a person who is very publicly pro-Black.
Yes.
And a protector of the Black community, I would say that I would, like, first of all, I stand with any community, minority community that has faced, you know, mass murder or any type, being oppressed by white supremacy in general. The enemy is white supremacy at all times. That to me,
that's what we're dismantling.
Yeah. The enemy always is always white supremacy for me, right?
That white supremacy, not white people,
yeah,
white supremacy.
Exactly. Let's be very clear.
We're making that distinction very clear.
Because I want people, the very, like I said, the enemy is not white people. Yeah. That's not what I said. Not white people. The enemy is white supremacy.
Yes. Yes.
That is the enemy, right? Just so we're clear on that. Thank you. So, like I said, also me being pro-Black and me also seeing, you know, there's anti-Black racism in all minority communities, right? Let's keep it a buck here.
Colorism is rampant in other cultures that aren't even Black and African
people,
you know?
And definitely rampant throughout the Asian community,
yes,
right?
Yes, facts.
And colorism in the Asian community also fuels anti-Blackness.
Facts.
Right? So my thing is, I will stand in solidarity with any minority community that faces oppression from white supremacy.
Facts.
But we need to realize, as minority groups, what real solidarity looks like. Yeah. Because solidarity doesn't look like coming together just because a certain minority group is now the victim of the month, right? We need to come together at all times. That means unpacking anti-Black racism in your community and what that looks like. It's unpacking the racial insensitivity that happens in your community against Black people, right? Black people are usually the people who are bottom of the totem pole when it comes to the races, right?
Yep.
Anti-Blackness happens in all communities.
Yep.
Because it's fueled by colorism.
Yep.
So until we can come into solidarity where other minority groups are unpacking anti-Black racism,
this will always be something we bring up.
This will always be an issue. And it's something that Black people do have the right to always be weary of.
I agree with
that. And I would never, ever, ever, ever encourage a Black person to completely turn their back on a community just because, oh, well, what about, it's also what about us, it's also, okay, you know what, I will support your community, but just remember that your community also needs to unpack this, right?
And I think it's fair to bring those things up, maybe not in the same.
It's just, it's doing the work.
Yeah.
Right.
I think
and not just doing the work when it's beneficial to you.
Yeah, when it's not convenient. When it's, you know, there's it's all over the news and stuff. Uh-huh. I really agree with that. And think I couldn't have worded it better. I stand with all groups too, but I think this will always be something attached to that, you know, like
right.
It's hard to bring up, you know, all that stuff without being like, yeah, you also need to unpack what's going on in your own culture and community too. And I think some of the, like, discourse or the conflict was like, hey, like, why bring that up or something right after such an awful thing happened,
right.
You know? Like, isn't there a better time maybe to have this conversation?
There's never a better time.
Yeah, and I think that's a point that I think needs to be articulated. Not in a combative way, not like, nah, fuck you, like, we need to also talk about this at the same time. It's like, no. Like, this is conversations that need to be had. This is work that needs to be put in, you know? So,
And why are the white supremacists never highlighted in these conversations?
Yeah, like,
that's
why?
That's another thing, too. Turn the dial now. It's not about how Black people can be better allies. How the fuck do we stop privileged white people who use their whiteness to build a supremacy against us. How do we stop that?
That shit, like, bothers me so much. It's just like, now you got Asian and Black people fighting and arguing with each other. When it was, like, NBC, who is a very historically, like, can
racist,
go, yeah,
right?
Yeah. We can go on and on about NBC and things that have happened with them. But it's just like, you know, it's like them pitting two minority groups against each other. And it, like,
that's literally what it was.
That shit bothers me so much. And it's like, I was talking about this with my mom, with my white mom the other day, about it almost bothers me more. Like, racism is such a prevalent thing, and as a Black person, you're confronted with it all the time, so it's, like, almost like a given. You're never gonna not have racism. But, like, racism to me is, like, a very big human error. It's ignorance, you know? Someone who is racist had that in their upbringing, you know? They learned that from somewhere, and it was drilled into their head, you know? Or for whatever. I can't unfathom why someone is racist. It's almost like a mental illness, you know?
Right.
But then when people are obtuse and people are born or in this era and generation and you see the Black Lives Matter movement, you see all this information that you are being presented with and you still have the audacity to be able to like, well, what about like, you know, but all lives matter pretty much, you know, when people just deny and are obtuse about racism almost bothers me more than racism, like woefully like ignorant racism, because it's like you're doing more thinking, you're going farther out of your way almost. Someone who's like really racist is that they were raised like that, like it was almost inevitable. But like I don't know, the people pretending and like not as if they don't know better is what bothers me, I think, the most about this, about these topics.
Yeah, like I said, it's very simple. It's, well, not very simple, but it is. What does real solidarity looks like, and who is the actual enemy?
It is simple, actually, when you put it like that. Like, what you're saying, I think, is simple, you know? It's white supremacy, that's the enemy, let's stop fighting with each other, but, like, let's also not pretend like these conversations aren't real and stuff that we have to have.
Yeah,
I agree with that.
Yeah, and I think even in the Black community, we have so much unpacking to do, even.
Yeah.
Even, like, with Meghan Markle.
Yeah, I was about to go there.
You know, some people, I go to people who, you know, they say, I don't believe her, and there's no way that she didn't know about the royal family and how their whole family was based on colonialism and racism and all that
stuff.
Oh,
you were about to marry into the racist family.
Yeah,
now
exactly.
You want to.
Now you're confused.
That conversation, right? Yeah, that narrative.
Now,
yeah, what, do you
what
think?
I believe is that I don't think they knew that it was going to be that bad. Because Meghan Markle is, and also...
Oh, yeah, let's get into this.
We can also speak about...
Go ahead, no, it's okay that I'm light-skinned. Say it, go ahead.
Not even that, but we can speak about...
White passing,
yes, and, like, the one-drop rule.
Yeah, stuff like that, right?
I read a really, really, really good article just kind of going into the history of the one-drop rule and explaining, you know, how it came about. And all the terms that were used for mixed-race individuals back during slavery.
Like, lots of ugly history attached
to
being mixed.
A lot
and
of
all
ugly
that stuff.
One-drop
rule, you know.
So, when I read that article, I had to really think, okay, so me being... Because my thing is, I've always considered any person who was half Black as Black.
Yep.
That's just how I used to think. You know, oh, if you're Black, you're Black. You know, you got Black in you, you're Black. That's really not technically, I would say, fair.
Because,
right, think of Meghan Markle, for example. She, in her head, and I'm very assuming, this is me looking from the outside in. I think that her and Harry didn't think it would be that bad because, one, she's biracial, and two, she's pretty white passing. Right? I think so, at least. That's my opinion.
I think that's a fair statement.
She's a white passing...
She can be mistaken for a white woman. She could receive not even just light skin privilege, full white privilege at times.
Right?
That could happen.
So
you know?
She is a biracial woman who is... white passing, I would say, right? So... Also, for us to look at... Like, I have a lot of friends who are biracial, right? Who have white mothers or whatever. For me to... say that they are...
What up, Dre?
Dre's not
light-skinned?
Dre's light-skinned, but...
No, that's an assumption. I'm just saying, you said you had light-skinned friends, so I'm saying
I'm
what up,
like,
Dre?
My friend, like, Cam and, like, Cachet, like, they have white mothers, right?
Oh, I don't know...
You don't know them.
I don't know. I know. But I'm beeping that out. Yeah. Jesus Christ. But listen to the wine getting me exposing myself.
I'm dead.
I just said Dre because I look at Dre as a fellow light-skinned guy. But I don't know what his parents are, if he's biracial or anything like that, you know, so.
We'll have him on again.
Shout out to Dre, yeah.
I'm dead. We'll have but him anyways, back. So when I look at my biracial friends, mm-hmm. For me to call them black, I'm also feeling like they're literally half black, half white, right? Yeah. Like my friend Cameron, for example, her mother is a white woman. She's like my second mom. So for me to call her a black woman, like I feel like I would be completely dismissing her half white side, right?
Okay.
Which I think it's fair that if someone is biracial, for them to be considered biracial, right? People should be allowed or should feel comfortable to say that they're biracial without diminishing their blackness.
Yeah, yeah.
Because Cameron is half black. You are half black.
Yeah.
You should be able to say, I'm a biracial man, yeah, without people diminishing your blackness. You are half black.
Yeah.
You shouldn't have to say that I'm a black man.
Well, yeah.
For that to be pushed, right? Because you have a white mother at the end of the day. That's half of you.
And this is
the person who carried you is white.
And this is a big thing with light-skinned biracial people, right? Is like our blackness not being recognized and right, stuff like that. I think, you know, being someone who's of that demographic, obviously, being biracial, having a white mother, I think the reason that a lot of this can be a gray area and so much can get misconstrued is because there's a lot of mixed people, there's a lot of biracial people who, like, I think identity has like a big part of it, you know, and right, there's a lot of mixed people who don't look at themselves as a black person. And I think, like, what you were saying, Meghan Markle may not exactly recognize herself the first thing as a black woman, you know,
right,
she recognizes herself as a mixed person, as a biracial person. I hear a lot of mixed people say that to me. You ask a mixed person what they are and they'll say, I'm mixed. Or they'll say, right, I'm biracial, you know?
Right.
And then you talk to other mixed people, and it's like, no, I'm a black person. I'm a mixed black person, or I'm a black
that
person.
Mixed black
that
person.
Also happened.
Yeah.
Now, my personally, how I navigate that in like my own experience, I grew up in Oakville mostly, you know?
Right.
A lot of my childhood took place there, which in the early 2000s was a pretty white area, you know?
Right.
I grew up around a lot of white people. So my experience, I wasn't, like, I didn't feel like I was mixed or half, you know? I felt like I was treated like I was like a black person. People looked at me as like a black person. They didn't,
right,
you know, make that distinction that I was that I had half white, you know?
Okay.
I felt like I was always recognized and looked at as a black person and treated like a black person. Literally until probably high school. I don't think I ever got the distinction of, oh, you're half too. So to me, I always feel like I've had that experience. So when people ask me, like, what are you? I say I'm black, you know?
Right.
And then and that's first to me. And then it's like, I also am mixed. Like, I'm not ignoring that. But like, that's how my identity works for me. I identify as a black man who is mixed. Because personally,
you have to be biracial though.
Like
you have
I am.
To identify as biracial.
I just don't under like that doesn't resonate.
But I understand
with me.
Why it's hard because you grew up in an area that was, I safe to say, majority white.
But
and they looked
yeah.
at you as black right away because.
But to me, I don't like it doesn't resonate with me calling myself mixed or biracial like that. To me, that's just like a circumstance. Like to me, like I happen to be mixed. Like I'm trying to. Like think how like I articulate this like
I
fuck man this fucking
wine. No, I think the black community needs to stop picking and choosing who we consider black when they're actually biracial, and we need to be more welcoming to, you know, black people do mix out of their race quite often,
yeah,
and it's okay for black people to be biracial, but they're still half black.
Yeah.
But it's okay to identify as biracial and still recognize that they are half black.
Like that
quarter black.
That's the thing too. I think there's like a lot of mixed people that maybe only grew up with their like white parent or something in their white family.
Right.
So like that's what they recognize with. To me, sorry, what I'm like, what the wine's making me struggle to remember. To me, being mixed isn't a race. Being biracial isn't a race to me. Like,
You are made up of two races.
I am. But like to me, like on your birth certificate or something, it's like
biracial.
Does it say mixed? Like on my, I don't think it says mixed on my birth certificate.
It should say biracial.
Okay, but I don't know. There isn't like a mixed lives matter. Like we would never say something like that, you know? Like
no,
I don't. I understand. Like it's different. In the experience of being a mixed person is different than being a full black person or a 100%. Full white person, right?
Yeah.
Like I think there's a unique experience with that too. But I think. Identity is what's most important. Like,
and I think we need to as a black community, we need to understand the differences or the experiences that biracial people have.
I think so too, but I think biracial people literally, I think mixed people literally take that shit too far when they try and make, oh, I was the only mixed person and they made fun of me for being sensitive or something like that. They made light skin jokes about me. So like, you know, that's like my version of colorism and racism. That's how I experience racism. To me, like, no, shut the fuck up. That's not the same thing. Being mixed and getting made fun of for being mixed or being, you know, the classic light skin jokes or whatever, that is not the same as experiencing colorism as a dark skinned person, you know?
Right.
I personally really don't like when biracial people conflate those two things because I don't think they're the same. While it is like, it is something that I think should be treated with like, you know, like you should consider like that, what you're saying, the experiences that light-skinned people have. But I think sometimes like the right amount of energy should be given to it. And I think that's something I think is an issue. Cause I don't know, I just see lots of mixed people and light-skinned people and I feel like they just articulate this so bad and they make themselves like, it's like, oh, well, I experienced colorism because people made fun of me for being mixed. And then there is the real way colorism seeps into that where, like, you know, you'll hear light-skinned girls be like, oh, they hated me because I was pretty and stuff like
right.
that, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, I think that's such a big issue. And part of the reason where people are associating and identifying themselves as mixed, and it's like, I don't know what that is.
I think it just needs to be very simple.
Yeah.
If you are made up of two races, you are biracial. I'm a black woman. I don't have a white parent. I don't have a parent from Indian descent or Asian descent. I'm not biracial.
Yeah.
I'm black. It should be okay for people to just identify as what they are. And I don't think communities should get to pick and choose who we consider black and who
yeah.
we consider biracial.
Yeah.
If you are biracial, you are biracial.
There's a lot of fun stuff that comes with that too. Like, you know, I'm doing a lot of news segments and I'm hosting and stuff for this YouTube channel. So a lot of comments and everything when I talk about shit is like, oh, you sound so white and everything like that. And that's a gripe that not even mixed people, that black people that maybe grew up in affluent areas or something like that, or just have good vocabulary. It's like, oh, you know, people say that I sound white or sound black. Actually, first of all, I'd like to know like your opinion on that. Do you think that that's a thing? Do you think someone can sound white or sound
no.
black?
No, because that's another part of like, that's a racist stereotype, right?
Yeah.
That black people are uneducated, so we don't articulate ourselves
yeah.
as white people do because they're the superior race, right? So they have access to education and they have the better paying jobs so they can articulate themselves.
Yeah.
There's no such thing as sounding white.
Maybe not when you put it like that, but I do think there are like, I don't know, maybe I really pay attention to this, like I really listen to the way people talk and inflections and tones
right.
and stuff like that. You know, you could listen to a white person on the phone or close your eyes and listen to a white person talk and, you know, guess that they're a white person and that be pretty accurate, you know, and get it right in something like that. And I think there's something to be said about that, the way that black people will sound or white people will sound, and I think that's like a real like a thing, you know. I think
it's based on stereotypes, though.
Yeah, I think it gets conflated with a lot of those things. But I also think that you can be black and like not sound so like, you know, cookie cutter perfect, and you can sound like a black person and, you know, use big words and sound different and
right.
stuff like that. I think it's like, you know, when you attach those stereotypes to it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I think. You can, I don't know, then there's white, there's the Chet Hanks thing, right?
Yeah.
You know, there's
like
accents and cadences, you know, are a very important thing to people's cultures, right? And
right.
I'm not Jamaican, but I kind of think, I don't know, I can see why people would be upset.
Right, that's fair.
I can totally see why people would be upset, but then I see Jamaicans from Jamaica that are like, oh, no, that's funny, and
yeah.
whatever. So it's like, I don't know. I'm not the person to make this distinction, but I don't know, the way you talk, I pay attention to things like this. And sounding white, sounding black, and all that, I think is very interesting.
Mm-hmm. That's fair.
What do you think?
I don't know. I think it's all... I don't think you can sound like a race. I mean, unless you have like a dialect or like a language, whether you have a Trinidadian accent or you're speaking Patois or, you know, whatever that looks like, or... but I don't think that you can, like, if you're just speaking without, like, an accent.
Yeah.
I don't think. People tell me, oh, like, you sound white. So what the fuck does that mean?
People tell you sound white?
People used to tell me I sound white, yeah. Mm. Oh, you sound white.
Well, it's like we said, white people sound.
Or, like,
sound...
you're so well-spoken.
Well, that shit, that's, oh, yeah. Man, I hate
what,
that shit.
What did you expect me to not be well-spoken? Why?
Well... Right? I think it's like a thing when people say about, you know, who's a great example for like what we're talking about? I think Cardi B is. Because Cardi B sounds...
Her grammar is terrible.
Yeah, she doesn't speak in perfect English and stuff like that. But like, yo, you ever hear Cardi's like Instagram stories or lives where she's talking about like taxes or something, or she's like attacking a politician or something?
Right.
And she's saying things that are very like well thought out and make a lot of sense and are like... No, like, what she's saying is very important and very smart, but it's in that Cardi B, like, you know, with the Bronx and everything like that, so it's like, I don't know. I think the way you sound is so, can influence so many things, you know?
That's fair, I guess. So how was this? I'm not taking any more wine.
Yeah, you gotta drive.
How was your first episode as a... co-host/guest?
Yo, it was scary.
Scary?
Like, I was nervous. No.
Don't lie.
No, you don't scare me. But I rate you, you know?
Oh, thanks.
I know that you're good at what you do. Like I said, you're authentic. You're a very real person. So it's like, coming into this, and like, I do a lot of scripted stuff where I'm speaking like, kind of like as an unbiased news anchor, essentially, right. Sometimes. So it's like, this is a different vibe. And like, you know, I want that. I want to be, that's why I love this platform, you know, being like a platform to be real and express things that like we're feeling. So yeah, I was a little nervous coming in, like, oh, this is some real shit. This isn't no like, you know, scripted stuff. And I've always like, yo, so this is some real shit too. Cause like, you know, I've always produced this podcast, been behind the camera most of the time, and we bring in these guests and we have these amazing conversations. And I always felt like, literally like, almost like, yo, I need to be popping enough, or I need to be at a place where like I would be a good guest for this podcast, you know? And when we started this, I definitely wasn't at that place, and I feel like, I don't know, I've leveled up, I got a different job and stuff like that now. So yeah, I feel like it was a journey. It was something that I feel like I had to earn, almost.
Right.
You know, being a guest, literally, like, I'm being dramatic about it, but no, that's how I felt. I was like, yo, I need to earn my own episode.
Right.
It took 12. But we got here.
Now you're here. That's good though. But yeah, this is good. I think season 2, we have a lot of things in store. We have a lot of new guests, new topics, new visuals. So subscribe to our YouTube channel.
And give feedback. You know, I love hearing like what you guys think about
what we think. Yeah, DM us, whether it's on the Relentless Diaries Instagram account or Twitter.
If you disagree with us, let us know.
Yeah, don't be afraid to talk shit.
Because
I'm not afraid to talk
shit. She's not. Yeah, she's, you know, like I said, I'm still figuring that out.
Yeah, but definitely, like I said, interact with us. Like, people, like, we do this because people ask for it and they listen to us, so.
I think they need it, man. There isn't. Everybody wants to start a podcast. They get 8 episodes in, and then they start talking about their day every single episode. And it's like, nah, we different. Relentless is a little different. We serve a purpose. We here for the people. And, you know, we got some unique stories and perspectives to share. So we here. We're for the people. For the culture.
So I'm excited for what we have in store. We have a really good list of guests that we are going to plan to come in over season 2. We have great new visuals coming. We have new wine that we're drinking, but we're not gonna name the wine because they have, once we get more sponsors,
you gotta pay us for that.
But we do drink.
We do.
So this was good. But yeah, I'm really excited to start episode 2. I think it's really good that we got what we have going on.
Season 2.
I think it's really going to be good to people, for people to see kind of like the come up of kind of where we started, like in your apartment, to like now being in like
a studio
with like expensive mics and cameras and backdrops and all that good stuff. So I'm excited for what this year has in store for us.
I'm excited too. And it's like, I've got a million things I'm doing, and it's like, I literally don't even like, I barely have time to do this, but I really wanted to. And it's something I think needs to happen. I think like, I really enjoy it. So yeah. We'll see what's going to happen.
Cheers.
Relentless Season 2.
Relentless Episode 1, Season 2.
Don't
forget to subscribe, download, tune in, review, all that good stuff.
You're...
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.